Major General Gordon Hall, Reel 3. You were saying, Major General, about your reasons for applying for the advanced mechanical course at Woolwich.
Yes, that was describing, if I'm right, that I had spent 2 years on administration, which, although I liked it, was not what I really joined the army in the hopes of doing, and that I felt that I must really get on to the mechanical side of things then, or I never would. And in consequence, I applied for the advanced class, and I got a place on it. And I joined the advanced mechanical class. And I got a place on it in the end of 33, I think. Yes.
Just before I just talk about that, during your 2 years at Bovington, you were concerned on administration and things. Did you have anything to do with the actual entry of the people coming into the corps?
No,
this
nothing
time?
At all.
No.
No, I looked after the organisation of the recruits. All recruits were posted to my company, and we fed them and paid them, and eventually, after they had reached certain stages in their recruit training, we used to send them off to Lulworth or post them to the central schools for mechanical training or what have you, before they went to service units.
Would you say that those recruits were any different to the your sort of entry? Any changes?
I don't remember them so well. I do remember we had a selection of rather poor ones, but I think the general average was much as it had been before, though they were younger. These were all 18 to 20s, whereas we had some appreciably older people out in Egypt.
These were officers coming in?
No, soldiers.
Yes. Mm. And when you went to Woolwich, were you working on AFEs at all there?
Only latterly. The course at Woolwich was a very much modified engineering degree course. As far as I could remember, we spent the first 2 months exclusively on mathematics, without which it was considered that we wouldn't be able to understand the other things we had to learn later on, such as strength of materials and heat engines and things of that sort. And, of course, that is quite true. I don't think without mathematics, the standard of the calculus, one would not have been able to understand those things or do the calculations necessary. It was at the end of that course that we went on to some practice.
You were saying, General, about the course itself at Woolwich.
Yes.
Did you find that this helped you with your later work?
Oh, very much indeed. It was absolutely invaluable. Not only immediately afterwards, when, as a result of it, I got a job as technical officer, technical adjutant, at my next posting to the 1st Light Battalion at Perham Down, but also later on still when I was made a staff captain in the War Office and had to do a great deal with engineers in industry, I would have had considerable difficulty if I hadn't understood the basic engineering terms and symbols and accepted facts.
Was that in mind at all when you were actually doing the course?
No, I don't think so. I just wanted to take advantage of an opportunity to learn about mechanical things.
Could you say a little bit then about this technical adjutant's job?
Yes. I was appointed, I think, as soon as I joined the 1st Light Battalion, coming straight from a course which very few people had done at that time. I was considered to be a most suitable chap to put in that job, and I enjoyed it, and I hope I was useful. My job consisted of looking after the mechanical state of all the vehicles. We had, at that time, we had light tanks Mark 3, 4, and 5, I think, which were prone to troubles because they had only fairly recently been evolved from more primitive early types. And I worked with the young officer in the Rimi, who with his light aid detachment was detached to us, so that between us we dealt with all the mechanical problems of the unit and advised the colonel.
What would you say were the main mechanical problems, in fact?
Steering was the one that gave us most trouble, because not only did we have bothers with short life of steering brake bands, the steering was done by the clutch and brake system on these light vehicles, which is possible because of they had a very short track base in relation to their width, and so they turned easily. And every time you steered, you had to put out a clutch on the transmission, which carried the whole torque of the engine, and for a tighter turn, you had to apply a brake. Well, of course, if that goes on the whole time, the brake has to be a very heavy-duty job to withstand it and to get rid of the heat generated. And we did have a lot of trouble getting these brake bands to grip over the whole surface. They tended to apply friction at the tips of the shoes or some other part, but very rarely over the whole. And that was the basic problem, which was eventually got over by making them in a number of segments.
Were you reporting on these problems?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did have to do some reports, which the colonel used to send up to the War Office.
And would you say that you'd seen evidence that, as a result of, say, reports that you made and other technical adjutants were doing, that improvements were made?
Oh, yes, because I was on one or two occasions sent for to sit in on design meetings with the manufacturers, which at that time were Vickers.
You went to see Vickers, did you?
Well, I attended meetings where these points were discussed, and I was occasionally called upon to voice my piece.
How did you find Vickers at this time? Were they cooperative?
Oh, very. Oh, yes. That particular section of Vickers, which was the tank design shop at Chertsey, had been bought by Vickers from the organisation of Carden and Lloyd, who had produced a very rudimentary light carrier. And they had a design facility there, and they had one or two designers, and Vickers thought they'd better get in on this, so they bought the whole thing after Sir John Carden died. And they kept on the designers, and they kept on Lloyd for a time as the business manager of the outfit, so that they could not be otherwise than cooperative, because that was the whole of their function, to design and make vehicles for the army.
Did Vickers come and attend your exercises? You would be involved in the 35 exercise.
Yes, I think they did. I don't remember any specific occasion, but certainly they would have been welcomed if they had come, and I believe they did.
What was your involvement in the exercises with the Light Battalion?
Well, I wasn't involved in the tactical exercises at all, because I was the technical adjutant, and when manoeuvring was going on, my job was to be there with a recovery lorry or something and behave like a garage breakdown.
Did you have many breakdowns?
Oh, yes. occasionally used to get tanks overturning or something like that, because we manoeuvred over some parts which were extremely hilly indeed. And it was quite possible for these slightly unstable light tanks to turn over or get into trouble in one way or another.
They did some night work at this time, night exercises. Were you involved at all in that?
I can't remember. No, I can't remember.
Why I ask is I wonder whether you had been involved in the searchlight ideas at this time, use of searchlights.
I don't think we had any searchlights, except for, we may have had a thing like a headlamp with shutters for signalling by lights. Now that would be Morse signalling. There was also a daylight signalling lamp, which was a very powerful bulb with an all-round dioptric lens, which you could also operate with a Morse key, and that had a daylight visibility of quite a long way. I mean, a matter of a mile, perhaps.
What was your job when you went to the War Office? What were your exact duties?
I took over from a Captain Chapman, who later became Brigadier Chapman and has just died. And his job was to look after the provision, design, and all other factors affecting light tanks in the service. That includes their movement. In other words, if somebody wanted to send 20 light tanks out to Egypt, you would be involved in, with the transport people, in organizing their movements, in having any overhauls which are necessary done, collecting them in the place from which they were to go, having them prepared for the journey and sent off.
Why do you think you were selected for that job?
Well, this was in a department under the MGO, which was called MGO5, and that dealt with armoured vehicles of all sorts. MGO6, a sister branch, dealt with transport vehicles, and we had a constant liaison, but nothing else. And this small branch consisted of a deputy assistant director and I think four staff captains and a quartermaster. And my particular job was to look after light tanks. Other people had infantry tanks or cruiser tanks or what have you.
But why had you been brought from the light battalion?
Because I had the most recent technical experience of light tanks, I suppose.
Yeah. What was the War Office policy as you understood it then for light tanks? Because you were responsible for design, were you not?
Yes. Well, the design was more or less committed for some years ahead, of course, but that was a development based on the Vickers original concept of the light tank, and we went through a series of further developments. The Mark V became the Mark VI, and then the Mark VI B and C, and so on, as armament was changed. But basically, that general design of light tank continued all the time I was there, and it continued into the war years, where it fought in Libya and other places. But light tanks were really dropped after that because they were not found to be effective.
Was the idea behind the use of light tank for imperial purposes, was that the aim?
No, it was reconnaissance, really. Long-distance reconnaissance. Rather what the cavalry used to do in the happy old days of the infantry and the horse, you see. The light tank would do medium-range reconnaissance. Long-range reconnaissance, that would be 100 miles, would be done by armoured cars who would come back and report to the commander, and then he would send out something which was a little more powerful than an armoured car. but I was not able to travel so fast or go so far.
Who were you actually working under?
Originally, under a General Brough as Director of Mechanization. He was the next echelon below the Master General of the Ordnance. And then below him was an Assistant Director of Mechanization, which in my case was a Colonel Studd. And then there was the Deputy Director who sat in the same office as I and the other staff captains did.
Did, while you were there, General Brough, in fact, was...
He didn't last very long while I was there. He was getting old, I think, and he was replaced by General Davidson, who was a very competent engineer and had had a lot of contacts with the heavy industry in the north. In fact, he'd done an apprenticeship with the Vulcan Foundry. So that he knew personally the sort of people one would be dealing with. And it was through his agency primarily, I think, that educational orders, as they were called, were given to a number of firms to prepare them for the manufacture of tanks should war break out. I remember the Vulcan Foundry, of course, was one, and there was North British Loco Company and Armstrong Whitworth. They were all given small orders for 10 tanks each, so they'd learn how to make them.
What kind of tank was that?
Oh, they were light tanks. They were the only ones we had ready at that time.
Yeah. So it was Davidson's idea, was it, to spread the load away from Vickers?
Whether it was wholly his idea or not, but as far as I was concerned, it was his idea.
How did you go about checking these firms? Did you have to visit them?
Oh, yes, quite a lot. And we used to see how they were getting on, see whether they had any difficulty with the supply of parts, you see, because all they did was assemble in the first place. Their engines would come from Meadows and the gearboxes from Armstrong Siddeley, I think it was, and their armour would mostly come from the Royal Arsenal at Woolwich, all cut and ground to shape, and these people had to sort of finish fit it and rivet it onto frames for which they would have to make jigs and fixtures.
What criteria did you use for checking the firms? Did you check that they were, for example, capable of manufacturing for War Office General Staff specifications, for example?
Of course, I didn't check them. I was too junior. They were checked by senior officers, either from the Director of Mechanization's Department or from the Mechanization Board at Woolwich. I haven't mentioned the Mechanization Board before, but they were a board of largely civilian, though not entirely, engineers who were the Director of Mechanization's advisors on almost every subject connected with tanks. I mean, if he didn't know, he used to send a minute down to the Mechanization Board and receive a considered reply from people who were supposed to be the most knowledgeable on that subject. And in the early stage of deciding whether they were suitable, I think undoubtedly the director himself, with the assistance of an officer of the Mechanization Board, would have done it. But yes, it was fairly obvious, actually, who would be likely to, because the main thing is that you'd be used to and capable of handling large, heavy things. If you hadn't got the cranes and equipment and room to do these things, there was no use starting.
The firms would be given all the designs and things.
Oh, yes, complete manufacturing drawings at that stage.
You mentioned Woolwich. What was the work that they were doing as far as you were concerned with the light tanks?
Oh, quite a lot, because there was, alongside the Mechanization Board, which was an advisory board, there was a department called the Superintendent of Design Department. And in some extraordinary way in those days, it was thought that one body could design anything. And there was a section called M section, which dealt with the design of tanks and vehicles, and they were the people we were constantly in touch with. And although others like Vickers did a lot of the engineering design of tanks and armored cars and things like that, the armament was entirely done by the superintendent of design. He produced the guns, and he also produced the designs for mountings and the specifications for armor plate and the specifications for the method of assembling it.
Were you, would you say, getting the sort of guns that you wanted?
Well, at that time, yes. But, of course, this is one of the big misconceptions, that the pre-war conception of a tank fight was that it would take place on the move, with everyone on the move, and at ranges not exceeding 800 yards. And any gun which had a sufficient penetration at those ranges was acceptable, because all you had to do was to penetrate, and that would finish the tank. I mean, because a shell would fragment inside, and even if it was quite a small one, if it would get through, that was good enough. Experience in the war, of course, showed that that was completely wrong. Tank actions were at far greater ranges than that, in on some cases going up to a mile or more. And, of course, there, the whole thing was to be able to penetrate at these long ranges, and the guns which we had envisaged as being suitable before the war were quite unsuitable for later stages, and it resulted in the development of enormous guns on both sides. But we were always inclined to be a step behind on that because of this pre-war misconception by the general staff, let me say, not the technical people.
That you were saying that you weren't getting the right sort of instruction.
Oh, yes. After all, we, the general staff put out a requirement stating what sort of a battle they expect to have and what sort of a beast they want you to design in order to enable them to fight that battle. The technical people don't decide what a tank should be. I mean, there are many opinions about this nobody can get at me now, I don't have the slightest hesitation in saying I think that concept is completely wrong. And unless the general staff have much greater technical training than they had then or even have now, it is far better to leave the development of the concept of a weapon in the hands of the technical people who are responsible for doing it. But that is not an accepted view.
Did you then, when you were working on light tanks, find in your experience that you were having this problem that you were just talking about, that you were seeing the need for a type of gun, for example, but that you weren't allowed to sort of go ahead with it?
Well, I was dealing with light tanks, at any rate, initially, and most of those things had been settled before I came into it. But there were efforts to produce a slightly more powerful armament, and I think in the final stage of development of the light tank, Mark 6C, the armament was changed from a Vickers water-cooled machine gun to a Bren gun, and the main armament was changed from a 0.5 Vickers to something on the lines of the boy's gun. I don't remember precisely what it was, because I didn't have much to do with it, but there were changes like that going on, you see, in attempts to give the light tank more punch.
So you weren't directly involved in the gun side of changes?
Oh yes, I was, but I don't remember what the name of the gun we substituted.
A Beezer, was it a Beezer?
No, well, the Beezer was the light machine gun.
Yeah.
It may have been an Oerlikon, but it was a heavier calibre and more powerful gun than the 0.5 Vickers.
Where was the pressure coming from for these changes? For example, there was criticism of the lack of a good gun on the light tank and that there was clutch trouble. Was this coming from the
From the, what we used to call the user, in other words, the people who had to operate the thing. They would be constantly reporting these things, and it was then given over to the development people to try and put them right.
What would you say was the main report coming back from the tank corps about light tanks at this time?
Well, it was mostly on this brake question, and allied to that, of course, the phenomenon hitherto unknown of reverse steering, which was a condition which you arrived at with a short wheelbase, short track base machine. If you were going downhill, you would try to steer to the right by declutching the right track. And instead of that having the effect of turning the tank to the right, it would turn to the left because the overrun of the free track overcame the resistance of the driven tack on the other side. And until you went further with your control lever and put the brake on, you continued steering in the wrong direction. And of course this led to a great deal of trouble and a great deal of damage to people's garden walls and things.